So we're well aware that this is the first day of unleavened bread, and we are gathered here on the 15th day of the first month to observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And that observance began last night with the last great day, or the first, excuse me, began with the night to be observed. I'm getting my holy days mixed up. And we're very blessed to be able to gather here as we're commanded to do. This is a holy convocation, and we have the blessing of coming before God on this day. And it's interesting as you look at the Passover and the days of unleavened bread, they are uniquely tied together, and the Passover sets the pace for everything else that comes. And so today is a follow-up to the Passover, and we learn certain things as a result of what took place with the Passover. So in the sermon today, we're going to look at the significance of the Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread for Israel. And the title of my sermon is God's Purpose for Israel, Part 1. And God's purpose for Israel is revealed in what is worked out through the Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread. On the last day of Unleavened Bread, we will continue to talk about the significance of the festivals of Israel, for the Israel of God, the church. And so we'll talk about God's purpose for Israel, Part 2. So Israel is very much a part of what's taking place with the holy days, and as you look at the Bible, for whom was the Bible written? The Bible was written by Moses for Israel, and thereby it would serve Israel and come to serve all people. And God meant for the book to be something that all would benefit from, but he began with Israel. So to understand God's purpose for ancient Israel, we have to consider the land of Egypt first and foremost on this day. So as you look at the land of Egypt, it was a magnificent nation, unbelievable because of all of the wealth and all of the qualities that you would find in that particular nation. As you look at Egypt in the time of the pharaohs, the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that Egypt was the preeminent land in the world. If there was a place that you wanted to move and live, Egypt was it. It was a place that was a land of wealth and abundance. It was a place that was blessed with good agriculture, good land, good crops, and trade. It was the most powerful nation on the face of the earth, and Egypt's army was the most powerful and effective on the face of the earth as well. And Egypt, through its army and in other ways, was able to expand its power and influence throughout the Mediterranean world at the time. It was the gift of the Nile, which provided annual replenishment of the soil, because every year the banks of the Nile would overflow, and as they overflowed, all of the silt would spread out onto the lands on either side of the Nile River, and they would provide more elements and more things that were going to produce good crops. And this happened year after year. And it was rare that the crops in Egypt would fail. We know they failed in Joseph's time, but that was not the rule. That was an exception. Most of the time, you could count on good crops in the land of Egypt. Egypt was also a land with vast monuments throughout the land. And those monuments already were there in the time of the patriarchs. They were impressive monuments that they were able to see in their time. And Egypt enjoyed a stable government, and it did enjoy an organized religion. And because of all of the positive things Egypt had going for it, it was the go-to place for people living at the time of the patriarchs. And as you think about the modern age, where have people gone? Where have the oppressed, the afflicted, the people that were suffering, where did they go? Well, they came to the United States. And in that way, the United States and Egypt were similar because they were abundant lands, land of opportunity. Egypt was a land of opportunity just as America has been throughout the history of recent times. So as you look at Abraham went down to Egypt when there was a famine in the land. He went down there and lived for a time. and then returned to the land of Canaan. Isaac wanted to go down there because times were tough in the land of Canaan, and God said, I don't want you to go down there. So he thought about it, but God said, I don't want you to go to the land of Egypt. In a time of famine, it was a place that you could rely on to have food. You could live there until the famine passed, or you could continue to live there and probably prosper. And as you, Abraham went down there, and he was able to make it through and then return to the land of Canaan. In the time of the Pharaohs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, we find that people looked to Egypt as a place of opportunity, wealth, power, and stability. And Egypt is a part of the story we're going to talk about today, but not quite yet. So let's think briefly about the Exodus story. We know that Israel, the people of Israel, the descendants of Jacob, somehow got down into Egypt. And we know that there was a situation with Jacob or Joseph going down to Egypt. He was sold into slavery. He ended up there, and he prospered there. And he then ran across his brothers as they came down during the time of famine to get food for their family and their livestock. They came and got food from Egypt and went back home. But Joseph noticed them. And so he confronted them, and eventually it worked out where Jacob was able to come down to the land of Egypt. And it says this in the scriptures, God wanted them to go down to Egypt. And you have to realize then when they went down to Egypt, there were 75 of them. Jacob, his sons, their wives, their children, 75 of them. And it says, and Jacob was uncertain about whether he should go down to Egypt, but God told him specifically to go down. Let's look at that in Genesis chapter 46, verse 1. It says, so Israel took his journey with all that he had, came to Beersheba, and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. Then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here I am. So he said, I am the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. You're going to prosper there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again. And Joseph will put his hand on your eyes. And that would be at death. He would close his eyes with his hand. Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob, their little ones, and their wives in the carts which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. So they came down to Egypt, 75 of them, and they were blessed to take up residence in the land of Goshen, a very good land that was offered to them, and they began to dwell there. And it's interesting, by the time you get down to where they're coming out of Egypt, you had 600,000 men. 600 men in Israel, and that's not including mothers and wives and daughters. That was probably at least another 600,000. So you're looking at 1.2 million plus the children. And it was very rare that families had one child. They had several children. So you were up around 2 million people by the time Israel came out. We don't know exactly where we're estimating. But we realize that in Egypt things were good, and Israel prospered in Egypt and thrived there. And you can tell they were prospering and thriving because they're growing in number. So they're growing in number, and they're growing to such numbers that the Pharaoh became worried about them being a threat. And whereas things had been good for the people of Israel, they turned hostile. The whole environment there turned hostile, and they made them serve as slaves of Egypt, and they were employed in building the different buildings that Pharaoh wanted built, and they were forced to do it, and they weren't paid for it. They served in hard bondage, and the hope was that by working hard, you would basically exterminate them. But that's not what happened. In fact, they grew in number. And then, you know, you came up with the idea of a genocide. Well, that wasn't going to be effective either. And what God saw was that the atmosphere that was pleasant and positive for Israel before the before Pharaoh began to enslave them had turned. And it was a hostile environment. It was an environment, in fact, in which God needed to get them out of. Because if he didn't get them out of Egypt, they would cease to exist. They would just be absorbed into the Egyptian population. There would be no Israel. But God's intent, God had a more, a greater vision for Israel than that. So we have gone through that the people of Israel groaned under the oppression and bondage imposed on them by the Egyptians. And God saw that Egypt was no longer a positive place for Israel to be. So the time came for Israel to go up out of the land. But the question that you have to ask, if they're enslaved, is if you're slaves, how are you going to leave the land? Are you just going to go? And Pharaoh owned them. They were Pharaoh's property. So are you just going to say, hey, Tutmos or whatever his name might have been, we've had it here, we want to go out of Egypt? And he's going to say, absolutely, go ahead and load up everything and make your way whichever direction you choose to go. That wasn't going to happen. And so they were not going to let them go. And as you look at Israel, they hated the condition that they were in, but they had no solution to it. They didn't know what to do about being enslaved. What do we do about this? You know, we can't go and say, you're not treating us very nicely, because they don't care. So they didn't have too many options, but they did not know that God was watching what was going on. God was aware of their condition, and God said, I'm going to reach down from my heavenly throne, and I am going to save you from this bondage, and I'm going to lead you out of the land to the place that I promised your ancestor, Abraham. But Israel itself, they had no plan. If they did leave Egypt, what were they going to do? How were they going to govern themselves? Where were they going to go? They had no plan. They didn't like their condition, but they had no solution to it. And so they basically cried out to God because there was no other solution. And God said, I'm going to take care of it. And he didn't do it immediately. He did it over time. So God was going to take them out of the land, and he looked upon Israel as his firstborn. He told Pharaoh that Israel is my son, my firstborn. That's how he looked at Israel. And he said, let my people go. Let my son, let my firstborn son go. But Pharaoh had no intention of doing that. So it was God's purpose to bring Israel out of Egypt, and Pharaoh, who was the only one who could authorize their leaving, was not going to relent. He was not going to release them because their wealth and their well-being as a nation depended upon the people of Israel doing the work. So God did, pour out 10 plagues on them, and eventually he destroyed their gods, and he broke the will of the Egyptian, and eventually they said, even Pharaoh said, get out. But it took a lot for their will to be broken. So he finally said, get out. And as you look at it, it's like he realized later, what have I done in letting these slaves leave? We're dependent on them. I'm not going to have any more cities or great monuments built without them. And of course, we know he chased them down to get them to come back. So God had determined that he needed to take Israel out of Egypt. So it's interesting, as you look at Israel, when they left Egypt, they were unleavened. They were unleavened because they were not to take leaven with them. They were to go an entire week without any leavening. So they left in an unleavened condition. So They at least had that going for them. So now we'll look at what God's purpose was for ancient Israel. Look at what we're told in the scriptures. And what we see being worked out here was God's purpose with Abraham and his descendants. And there are some things we need to keep in mind as far as the story goes. It was God's purpose, not Abraham's purpose, to, or that of his descendants, to leave Egypt. It was God's purpose, and God was working out his purpose there. God reached down from heaven and called Abraham out of the world, and he continued to call and work with his descendants, Isaac and Jacob, and the children of Israel. And as you look at the story we've recounted, we find God's intervention and action being taken on behalf of Israel again and again and again. And as we'll see, that's a great lesson for all of us as well. So God brought Israel out of Egypt is the first fundamental point we want to take a look at. God brought Israel out of Egypt. Question that we might ask, okay, he brought them out, why not just leave them there? Why not just leave them in Egypt? Wouldn't they have been fine there? Well, we can already tell that the situation there is deteriorating, and it wasn't going to get any better. So God said, we need to leave Egypt. And the reason was God did not want Israel to become Egypt. If they had remained in Egypt, the Israelites would have become Egypt. They had already been powerfully impacted by Egypt and its society and what was going on there. As we'll see later in the sermon, they were powerfully impacted by what was going on in the land of Egypt. But God said, I don't want you to become Egypt. If it didn't matter, God would have left Israel in Egypt. But by the fact that God brought Israel out of Egypt, he's telling us that Egyptian society had become hostile, and for them to remain there was not going to be good for them, was not going to be good for them as a people. Israel did not see God's purpose, but God saw clearly what he wanted to accomplish with the nation of Israel. And God was not, and as you think about it, God was not seeking to set up Egypt on the other side of the Red Sea. God was not interested in setting up Egypt in the land of Canaan. God was interested in setting up something completely different from Egypt. And he tells us about that in Leviticus chapter 18, beginning in verse 2. Leviticus chapter 18, verse 2. In Leviticus 18, verse 2, it says, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, I am the Lord your God. According to the doings of the land of Egypt where you dwelt, you shall not do. So the way things were operated and the actions and attitudes that people had in the land of Egypt, none of that you are to do. You're to leave that behind. You're not to take it with you. So they're not to act according to the doings of the land of Egypt where you dwelt. You shall not do according to the doings of the land of Canaan. So I don't want you to be like Egypt. I don't want you to be like Canaan. So I don't want you to be like Egyptians or Canaanites. He was taking them to the land of Canaan, and the Canaanites could be powerfully influential, as we'll see in the history of Israel. But God said, don't adopt their practices, their religion, their way of doing things. Verse 4, you shall observe my judgments and keep my ordinances to walk in them. You're to live the way that I lay out for you, the way that I instruct you. Because then you're going to have a different society, a better society. You're going to reach your full potential, which you will never do in Egypt or Canaan if you just accept their way of living. So he's taking them out and going to begin something totally different. And fundamental to that is the fact that he is their God. Verse 5, you shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, which if a man does them, he shall live by them. I am the Lord. And he doesn't just mean you're going to continue breathing. When he says you shall live by them, he means it's going to be a guide to the way you live and you deal with me as your God and as you deal with one another. I'm seeking to lead you in a completely new and different way of living than what you've experienced for the time you've been in Egypt. So he's giving them an opportunity that is unprecedented to begin a totally new society. Let's go to Exodus chapter 23 and look at verses 20 through 25. Exodus chapter 23, 20, let's begin there. It says, "Behold, I send an angel before you to keep you in the way and to bring you into the place which I have prepared." So I am going to send my angel before you, and that's not an angel, but his messenger. His messenger, which we know to be Jesus Christ. He was the one that led them. And he tells them in verse 21, "Beware of him and obey his voice. Do not provoke him, for he will not pardon your transgressions. For my name is in him." So the Father is the one who designated the Son, or the one we know as the Son, to go down and lead Israel out of Egypt. Verse 22, "But if you indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. For the angel will go before you and bring you into the land of the Amorites," or the land of Canaan and the different peoples that live there. "And I will cut them off." Now, God said he would cut them off. Why? Why would he cut them off? Because you're going to have the same problem in Canaan if you don't cut them off, because they're going to be influential on your people. They're going to seek to get you to follow their ways, their gods, their religious practices. They're going to seek to influence you. And so God says, I'm going to cut them off. And that way they're not going to be living in the land with you and influence you. "You shall not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do according to their works, but you shall utterly overthrow them and completely break down their sacred pillars." Now, for all of us living in the 21st century, this is unbelievable that God would do such a thing. But you have to realize God's looking at the bigger picture. These are my people. I want them to thrive. I want them to prosper. And they're only going to do so by putting into practice the things that I teach them and instruct them in. And they're only going to be able to do that as they have a relationship with me, the one true God. So I'm asking them to do this in order to make sure their society only has those people in it who are walking in God's way. And it's not that God hated those people. It's just at that time, this was the purpose he wanted to work out with Israel. And God also could see far into the future, when there would be a time when the way to God is going to be known by everyone. And it's going to be open to everyone. But now, in 1440 BC, this is not the time. But that time will come. So he goes on to say in verse 25, "So you shall serve the Lord your God, and he will bless your bread and your water." He said, "I will take sickness away from the midst of you. No one shall suffer miscarriage or be barren in your land. I will fulfill the number of your days." So you'll live long and you'll prosper. This is what I want to give you, and I want you to understand what I'm trying to work out. So he lays out his plan for them, which is to become the nation of God. He wants them to become the nation of God. And we have to realize, as God is dealing with the people of Israel and what he's seeking to accomplish, and what he accomplished in Egypt was a unique event. It was a unique event. In bringing Israel out of Egypt, there was no way Israel could have risen in rebellion and freed themselves from bondage. But let's look at what God tells us in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 34. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 34. And this is, you know, God was speaking through Moses, and he was laying out what he was going to accomplish and what a wondrous thing it was. And so this, in Deuteronomy, God is, it is the second giving of God's law. And God has gone through these things, but now he's going over them again before Israel goes into the land of promise. And we see in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 34, or did God ever try to go and take for himself a nation from the midst of another nation? When has that happened? When has God gone in and taken for himself a nation from the midst of another nation? By trials, by signs, by wonders, by war, by a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, and by great terrors, according to all that God, the Lord your God, did for you in Egypt before your eyes. When has this ever happened before? It hasn't. It had never happened before, but God, in his might and his power, had a promise to fulfill, and he reached down into the land of Egypt and accomplished his purpose. Verse 35, to you it was shown, that you might know that the Lord himself is God, and there is none other besides himself. So God went through and performed, you know, what truly were miracles with everything that he did with the plagues on Egypt. All of them were miracles, and God worked them out, and Israel saw these miracles take place, and there were circumstances after a certain point in the plagues that they only impacted the Egyptians. So the bad things are happening in the Egyptian territory, and Israel's fine. So you have to be standing there, I'm standing here in the sunshine and everything's nice, and over here it's dark and it's raining like crazy and flooding, and you've got all these problems. We don't have them. So, there's some distinction being made between us and the Egyptians. Now, as I say that, you have to realize I'm not saying that Israel was better than the Egyptians. Israel was not better than the Egyptians. When God passed over the sins of Egypt, was it because the Israelites were stellar human beings and deserved God's grace and mercy? They weren't. Again, we'll see at the end of the sermon, they weren't. They were human beings, do what humans do. But because God had made a promise to Abraham, he was going to save Israel. It had nothing to do with the righteousness of Israel. It had to do, God said, I'm going to bring them out, I'm going to save them, and I made a promise to Abraham, with whom I entered into covenant. It wasn't because Israel was a superior people. But God was going to give them a chance to become a special people by the way they lived. So God reached down and miraculously, in a unique way, brought them out of the land of Egypt. And this is a day that we're told to remember. Let's go to Exodus chapter 13. Exodus chapter 13, beginning in verse 3. Exodus chapter 13, verse 3. And Moses said to the people, remember this day in which you went out of Egypt and the house of bondage, for by strength of hand the Lord brought you out of this place. No leavened bread shall be eaten. So God, through his power and his strength, saved us from bondage to sin. For us, we're not coming out of a country, we're coming out of a way of life, we're coming out of a system that God is bringing us out of. Israel was brought out of a particular land that had become hostile and being moved to another land. We're being brought out of a system, and we're being instructed to live differently, which we'll speak more about on the last day of unleavened bread. But as part of this, they're to eat no leavening. And not eating leavening is significant. It's not just that God said, I don't want you to eat any leaven for a week, and it has no meaning or significance. You're to eat that no leavened bread for a reason, because of what it symbolizes and what it tells you as the people of God. It says in chapter 13, verse 4, on this day you are going out in the month Abib, and it shall be when God brings you into the land of the Canaanites and the other ites, which he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, that you shall keep this service in this month. So even when you arrive in the promised land, I want you to continue to keep these days of unleavened bread. I want you to be reminded of what took place in Egypt and beyond. I want you to remember these things because they're significant parts of my plan of salvation. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Lord. So, you know, we're to eat unleavened bread. Now, there's a controversy, should we or shouldn't we eat unleavened bread every day? That's something you'll have to decide. But from my point of view, it's the days of unleavened bread. And if you want to get the point, I would think that eating some unleavened bread every day would help to reinforce that point. So, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do a bread fast this whole week. You may miss something there if you're doing that. So you want to eat the unleavened bread, but not just stuff your face with it. You know, I love butterhorns. They are unleavened. I can stuff my face with them and do that easily. I know somebody in my family who has, but I won't bring up his name at this point, but he likes them and eats them. He loves eating them. But you can do that, but then you miss the whole point. So you want to eat a piece and think about, what does this mean? What does this mean about the way that I'm supposed to live? What point is God trying to get across to me? So he goes on to say that, he says, and no leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. And you shall tell your son. You know, you're to tell your son, your daughter, your children, we're doing this for a significant reason. We're doing this because God is teaching us a great lesson that I need to learn and you need to learn. We all need to learn. So he says, I want you to teach your children about this. You know, and so as we go through the days of unleavened bread, we teach our children, and we do this because God has instructed us, and he gave us this instruction because of the following reasons, and tell them so they know and they understand. It shall be a sign to you on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be in your mouth. And what does God want from these people of Israel? He wants them to eat this unleavened bread, and as a reminder that God's law is to be in your mouth. And as the Bible says, why is that significant? Out of the abundance of your heart, the mouth speaks. So if our hearts are filled with God's truth, God's law, God's way of life, then it's going to come out in our tongue. It's going to come out in our actions. And that's what God was seeking to establish in the nation of Israel. So the passage ends with, for with a strong hand, the Lord has brought you out of Egypt. You shall therefore keep this ordinance in its season from year to year. And that's what we seek to do because it's important. And so God's law was to be an essential part of their lives, and to govern the way they lived as a people. Now, as you look at God bringing them out, something was significant for the people of Israel, and God made it very clear to the people of Israel that he was with them. It was through his might and power that they were freed, but God didn't just say, adios, good luck, I'll see you someday. He didn't do that. He went with them. Let's go to Exodus chapter 13, verse 17. Exodus chapter 13, verse 17. And this clearly tells us that God was with them every step of the way. In verse 17, it says, then it came to pass, when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God did not lead them, so he led them in a particular direction for a particular purpose. Now, and as he's going to explain, he didn't lead them the easy way. He led them the long way, which was going to be difficult for them and was going to make it possible for Pharaoh to come after them and try to force them to come back and continue their servitude. So God led the people around by the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea, and the children of Israel went up in orderly ranks out of the land of Egypt. So they took their journey from Succoth and camped in Etham at the edge of the wilderness, and God and the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light so as to go by day and night. They could travel by day, they could travel by night, because God was with them. And God provided a cloud over them to shelter them from the sun. And we live in Houston, and I know when I'm mowing my lawn and it's a hot day, when the cloud comes over, you can actually feel it. Ah, that feels pretty good. I know it's not going to last, but I'm enjoying it while the cloud's over me. But we know if you're in a hot place, when a cloud comes over, it is pleasant. And this was the blessing that God gave to Israel. And God was with them in that pillar of cloud every day. And as night came, he was with them. And if it was God's purpose to continue leading them, then they had the pillar of fire before them to lead them to wherever God was leading them. So it says in verse 22 of Exodus 13, he did not take away the pillar of cloud by day, or pillar of fire by night from before the people. So was God with them? It was obvious every day. When they got up, there's the pillar of cloud. When they went to bed, there was the pillar of fire. He was with them every day. So God had done things for them that clearly displayed that he was God and that he was present and intervening on their behalf. Now he's leading them, and it's indisputable that God's right there before you. So this is happening. You're thinking, how can these people not get it? But we'll see, they don't. But that won't be the focus of what we're talking about today. But sadly, they didn't get it. And seeing is not necessarily believing, not when it comes to spiritual things in God. So as you look at God, where did God lead them? It's interesting where God led them. So God is going before them in the pillar of the cloud and the pillar of fire. Where is he leading them? We alluded to it in the last point that God was with them every step of the way, but where was God leading them? We find out about that in Exodus chapter 14, where Israel ends up at the Red Sea. And they're boxed in. There's no place for them to go. And they, being people that have seen God but don't believe God, they believe they're in desperate trouble and Pharaoh's going to wipe them out. But God steps in, and God sees the Egyptians coming, and he steps in and makes sure that the Egyptians can't get at Israel. And he basically takes a place as God between Israel and Egypt. The Egyptians can go no further, and God makes sure that Egypt does not attack the Israelites. And then God makes a way through the Red Sea. He makes a way through the Red Sea for them. There was no way out from a human perspective. All of Israel saw the Red Sea before them. And we can't go back. We can't go left or right because the mountains are on either side of us. So which way do we go? Well, most people would not think, well, we'll just go straight ahead. But God is God. And God said, you're going to go straight ahead. And God opened up a swath of that Red Sea that was wide enough for the people of Israel to go across in a large group. God did not just... You know, you look at, not to disparage the sign we have in the hall, which you can take pictures in front of, and here's the first day of unleavened bread. We have a picture going through the Red Sea. So I know we took one picture facing the camera, the other picture with our going through the Red Sea with our backs. But anyway, it's up to you if you want to use it, but we left it up, and it was a nice touch that Michelle Machen came up with for last night. And we left it up so all of you can make use of it if you'd like. This doesn't happen most days of unleavened bread, just this year. But anyway, God opened the way through the Red Sea. And Israel walked across dry shod, and they got to the other side. And what's this all about? God led them to this point. And when they went through the Red Sea, it was a type of baptism, as 1 Corinthians 10 tells us. They were being baptized at this point. They were being baptized as they walked through the sea. And when they got to the other side, the whole nation of Israel had been baptized. The whole nation had been baptized. And they saw this great miracle, because as they went into the Red Sea, the Pharaoh saw, hey, these people are vulnerable. We can get them. They're walking. We've got chariots and horses. We'll run them down and we'll make them go back to Egypt. But they got down into the Red Sea and God said, no, we're not going to do this. And he just closed the sea over them. And as the people of Israel thought about this, what God had done for them by taking them through the Red Sea, you know, they said this in Exodus chapter 15, verse 11. Exodus 15, verse 11. It says, who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises, doing wonders? You stretched out your right hand, the earth swallowed them. You, in your mercy, have led forth the people whom you have redeemed. You've guided them in your strength to your holy habitation, to be able to have a relationship with God, to dwell with God. And they were all baptized. God led them to baptism, just like for you and me when we became baptized. That wasn't, you know, we had to agree to it, but who led us to that point? The same God who led Israel through the Red Sea. So let's go on and look at one other verse here, Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 29. Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 29. So as Deuteronomy 1 is spoken by Moses, Israel is on the brink of going into the land of promise. They've spent 40 years into the wilderness and they're on the brink of entering the land. And we come to Deuteronomy 1. God speaking, he says, then I said to you, do not be terrified or afraid of them. The Lord your God who goes before you, he will fight for you according to all he did for you in Egypt before your eyes. So just as God intervened for them at the Red Sea, God was going to intervene for them as they enter the land of promise. And in the wilderness where you saw how the Lord your God carried you as a man carries his son, in all the way that you went with until you came to this place, yet for all that you did not believe the Lord your God who went in the way before you to search out a place for you to pitch your tents, to show you the way you should go in the fire by night and in the cloud by day. And God had picked this place out for them. And God had been with them. God had led them. And he continued to lead them, even in the land of promise. And as you think about where God led Israel after out of Egypt, where did he take them? He didn't take them to the next large city where they could take up residence. He took them to the wilderness. God took them to the wilderness. The question is, why would he take them to the wilderness? Because if you get down around where the Red Sea is and you look across from Egypt across the Red Sea, what do you see across the Red Sea? Virtually nothing. I mean, from my perspective, it looks very dry. So it's not a promising place across the Red Sea. And if you've been to the desert, it's dry. The foliage is pretty stark. And most of us would not choose to live in the desert. Some do. But I like a place that has more green and trees and bushes and things to it. But he led them into the wilderness for a reason. Why do you think God took them out to the wilderness? Because God wanted to work with them without any distractions. You're not going to have anything around you that can distract you. And you can focus on what I'm trying to teach you. So God removed all the distractions by putting them into the wilderness. He took them into a place where they were going to be dependent on God for food, dependent on God for water, and protection. There were no stores out there. Hey, we need to get some new clothes. Well, God took care of that because their clothes lasted, their shoes lasted, everything lasted through their time in the wilderness. And God blessed them in that way. Let's see what Ezekiel 20 verse 5. This is where the prophet Ezekiel is talking about Israel in the land of Egypt, and right after they came out of the land of Egypt. And it's interesting, the points he makes. Exodus chapter 20, beginning in verse 5. Say to them, thus says the Lord God, on the day when I chose Israel and raised my hand in an oath to the descendants of Jacob and made myself known to them in the land of Egypt. I raised my hand in an oath to them, saying, I am the Lord your God. On that day I raised my hand in an oath to them to bring them out of the land of Egypt into a land that I had searched out for them. God says, I searched out the land that you're going to go. I scouted it out. I'm the one who chose this land for you. I scouted it out and to bring them out of the, and so God began to lead them, and he to bring them out of the land of Egypt to into a land that I searched out flowing for them, flowing with milk and honey, the glory of all lands. Now, I would love to have seen this land back in 1400 BC, because in 2020, 2021, it doesn't look like the glorious land. Maybe it was, but maybe it looked like this, but I doubt it. I personally think that there were a lot more trees in the land of Egypt at that time, but we'll never know until, you know, God has videos or whatever back in the time to come. And then it's interesting what he begins focusing on beginning in verse 7. Exodus 20, verse 7. This is God speaking. Then I said to them, each of you throw away the abominations which are before your eyes, and do not defile yourselves with the idols of Egypt. These people were Israelites. Were they worshiping the gods of Egypt? It certainly seems to be the case. And he tells them, don't defile yourselves with the gods of Egypt, the idols of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. But they rebelled against me and would not obey me. They did not all cast away the abominations which were before their eyes, nor did they forsake the idols of Egypt. Then I said, I will pour out my fury on them and fulfill my anger against them in the midst of the land of Egypt. So God saw that they were caught up in idolatry. God told them to throw these idols away, but they didn't do it. And God actually thought of wiping them out right then and there in the land of Egypt. He thought about it. But then he said, but I acted for my name's sake, that it should not be profaned before the Gentiles among whom they were, in whose sight I had made myself known to them to bring them out of the land of Egypt. So Israel was already caught up in idolatry while they were in Egypt. And it ran through his mind to go ahead and wipe them out before they ever really got started, because they didn't throw away the idols. But God had mercy on them and allowed them to continue on. So should it be any surprise that these people, when they became worried about their leader, would make a god out of all of the gold that they had gotten out of the land of Egypt? Shouldn't be surprising. They were already caught up in idolatry when they left Egypt. Verse 10, therefore I made them go out of the land of Egypt, brought them into the wilderness, and I gave them statutes and showed them my judgments, which if a man does, he shall live by them. So God brought them out of Egypt. He brought them into the wilderness, and he sought to instruct them. I gave them my statutes and showed them my judgments. So God was educating them in the way of God, the way that is right to live. He was showing them the way and making it plain to them. Moreover, I also gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between them and me, that they might know that I am the Lord who sanctifies them. I want them to know me. I want them to know that I'm the one who brought them out. I am the one who set them apart. And I want them to have that special relationship with me. God brought them out and was seeking to instruct them in things like the Sabbath, his commandments. He gave them his commandments. He gave them all of these things to establish this foundation for Israelite society. So he's giving them all of these things that are going to be a blessing to them and allow them to prosper, allow them to truly be successful in life. And again, they were resistant. God gave them his truth, but they didn't buy it. They didn't accept it. They didn't practice it. And God thought about, I'm going to go ahead and wipe them out. But he didn't. He thought about it, but he did not destroy them. And if you go through on in Ezekiel 20, you'll see that there are other points in time where he came to the same conclusion because they were so resistant. And eventually he did allow the nation to fall and go into captivity. But you can see that God wanted good things for the nation of Israel. So the bottom line of what God wanted with Israel and what God wants with you and me is the unleavened life. They were leaving. As they left Egypt, they were unleavened. And he wanted them to remain unleavened. As we leave sin behind, God wants us to remain unleavened as well. And let's look at what we're told in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 1. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 1. Moses says, "Now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the judgments which I teach you to observe, that you may live and go in and possess the land which the Lord God of your fathers is giving you. You shall not add to the word which I command you, nor take from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God which I command you. Don't add to it. Don't take away from it. Take what I've given you and put it into practice." Verse 5, "Surely I have taught you statutes and judgments just as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should act according to them in the land which you go to possess. Therefore be careful to observe them, for this is your wisdom." What is this? This is your wisdom. And it gives you wisdom above all peoples around you. The wisdom of God surpasses all human wisdom. And God is offering his wisdom to them. "This is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples who will hear all these statutes and say, 'Surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people.'" So as you take the law of God and live it, put it into practice in your country, people are going to notice. They're going to notice that you're different. They're going to notice that your laws are laws that really bring blessing and benefit to all of the people living in the land. And you have justice in your land, and you have peace in your land, and you have all of the good things that can come in life. They'll say, "Surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people." Verse 7, "For what great nation is there that has God so near to it as the God, Lord our God is to us? For whatever reason, we may call upon him." God is near to them. "And what great nation is there that has such statutes and righteous judgments as are in all this law which I set before you this day?" And you think, and what God's telling you is how magnificent his law truly is. But look at the world in which we live. How does the world around us see the statutes and judgments of God? I don't think they would assess it the same way God is laying it out here. "Only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life, and teach them to your children and to your grandchildren, concerning the day you stood before the Lord your God in Horeb, when the Lord said to me, gather the people to me, and I will let them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days they live on the earth, that they may teach their children. So God wanted what he was teaching them to be put into practice, and he wanted it to be passed on from that first generation out of Egypt to their children, and to their children's children, and to be something that was perpetually passed on from one generation to the other. This is what God wanted for them. This is why God was leading them out of Egypt, in order to establish something so wonderful. And you know, as we look at Deuteronomy 28, it goes through what happens to a nation that puts these things into practice. Let's look at Deuteronomy 28, beginning in verse 1. Deuteronomy 28, beginning in verse 1. And here God says, now it shall come to pass, if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments, which I command you today, that the Lord your God will set you high above all nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you because you obey the voice of the Lord. He's talking about the unleavened life. The unleavened life here in Deuteronomy 28. So is there any benefit to living the unleavened life? I would think there would be. And it says in verse 3, blessed shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the country. The way things are in this world, many times we're not blessed to be in the city because of all of the problems that are there. We're better off being in the country. At least there are less problems. He says in verse 4, blessed shall be the fruit of your body, the produce of your ground, and the increase of your herds, and the increase of your cattle, and the offspring of your flocks. So you'll have abundant crops and food, and plenty of meat for your table. Verse 5, blessed be your basket and your kneading bowl. So you'll have good crops of grain, and you'll be able to have plenty of bread, and be able to enjoy that blessing on a regular basis. Verse 6, blessed shall you be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out. When you go in, when you come out, God will be with you. The Lord will cause your enemies who rise against you to be defeated before your face. They shall come out against you one way and flee before you seven ways. I'll be with you. I'll watch over you. And when other nations come against you, which they surely will, because when they see people who are keeping God's law and living in peace, like in the world tomorrow, they'll be living in unwalled cities. And all of the predator nations around them will think, wow, these guys are fools. They don't have walls up. They're vulnerable. And from a thief's perspective, these are going to be an easy mark. And they're going to go right in after them. And God's going to say, no, we're not going to do that, fellas. And God's going to protect his people. And that's what he's telling the people of Israel at this point. I will be watching for you. I will protect you. And as you take on these other nations that attack you, they'll flee seven ways. Verse 8, the Lord will command the blessing on you in your storehouses and in all in which you set your hand, and he will bless you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you. The Lord will establish you as a holy people to himself, just as he has sworn to you, if you keep the commandments of the Lord your God and walk in his ways. Is that worth pursuing? I think it is. It's the unleavened life. Why? Love your God with all of your heart, mind, and soul. There are no downsides to it. There's only an upside. There are only blessings and opportunities. Is there a downside to loving your neighbor as yourself? Most neighbors aren't going to complain about that. You know, our neighbor is really nice. He's thoughtful. They're good neighbors. Most neighbors aren't going to complain about that. And those are the kind of people that God wants us to be. to learn his way of life, and to put it into practice in every facet of our lives, in our homes, in our jobs, every aspect of it, to live that unleavened life. And as we live that unleavened life, God said, I'm going to bless you. I will bless you in every way. And what's exciting about this particular season, as we think about it in summary, is that God fulfilled his promise to Abraham. God fulfilled it. He made the promise to Abraham, and that promise was passed on to his descendants, Isaac and Jacob, and that promise is ours. We may not have a drop of Israelite blood in our bodies, but that doesn't matter. God said, you'll be blessed because you have entered into covenant with me, and I want to bless you. I want to give you every good thing in life if you will learn my commands and honor me and follow me. So we're reminded by the Passover in the days of unleavened bread that God fulfilled his promise to Israel. And we know that God led Israel to the land of promise at Passover time. There, as they went into the land, they kept the Passover, and then they began the conquest of Canaan, beginning with the city of Jericho. And we can see clearly God had a plan for Israel, and he fulfilled that plan. And for all of us as the Israel of God, the church, God has a plan for us as well. And he wants us to be assured by these days that as the Israel of God, he's going to fulfill those promises. And we will look at God's plan for the Israel of God on the seventh day of unleavened bread. So thank you all for your attention. Please continue to have a wonderful Sabbath day. Please enjoy the days of unleavened bread. Think about it as we go through the week, what God has done for us and what God wants us to learn from these days. So please have a safe journey home, and we'll see you back here next Sabbath at 10:30 p.m. Or let's get that right, 10:30 a.m. for the last day of unleavened bread. So have a great week ahead of you.